Welcome to The Jones Zone, a podcast by Daryl and JJ Jones, your resource for building wealth and knowledge in everything real estate. Your host, Daryl Jones, a top Orange County real estate agent, has been supporting homeowners for over 30 years. He is here to share his tips and advice, as well as insights from industry experts, to help you take your real estate game to the next level. Now, here's your host, Daryl Jones.
Thank you for joining us for part two of this estate planning series. I encourage you to listen to part one if you haven't already. But if you're ready for part two, we will continue to talk about all the amazing benefits to estate planning. Welcome back, Stephanie. How are you doing, Stephanie?
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Good, good. Let's go ahead and dive right into it. So tell me this. This is something that I get asked quite a few times, and I'm frankly interested in myself in knowing more. What is a durable power of attorney, and how can it be used in estate planning? What's the difference between a durable and what other choices do you have, frankly?
You could have a regular power of attorney. Well, really what durable means is that it's going to continue to be in effect even if you're incapacitated, whereas without durable in it, it means that it doesn't go into effect when you're incapacitated, which defeats the purpose. Nobody does anything anymore that isn't a durable power of attorney. A durable power of attorney comes into play for money and for healthcare. I always say people have two different people in their lives. People that are good with money, that are practical, that, you know, file their taxes, balance their checkbooks, that kind of stuff. And then the people who are warm, who are going to hold your hand, make sure your hair's washed, make sure that you're taken care of. Sometimes those two people, those two roles are the same person, but oftentimes they're not. It just depends on your personal pool of people that you can go to for assistance.
It sounds to me as though, for example, typically the spouse is the durable power of attorney.
Yeah, usually what happens if you're married, your spouse is your first choice. And then I recommend that you pick at least three others in the order that you would want them to go. Because what happens is if it gets to a point where there's nobody named that is available, then the court decides. And you always want to prevent that. You always want to decide for yourself. So if, say, Bob and Jane were married, then they would be each other's first choice, and then they would have three backup choices.
Got it.
Just in case.
Right. And so you give it maybe your least favorite kid. I'm just kidding. All right.
Sometimes not to your kids at all. Just,
yeah.
It just depends.
It can be overwhelming. I've handled a lot of estates and where people are selling, let's say, properties, and it is overwhelming when someone passes. So it's nice to not have that additional baggage. Of course, that's when someone passes. Even, of course, if someone's ill, too, there's so much stress involved in that. You want to make it as little stress as possible.
Yeah. For instance, with the healthcare power of attorney, that's hard. The healthcare power of attorney is going to deal with the, you know, pull the plug, don't pull the plug type of question that, you know, people refer to. Not everybody can deal with that. When your parent is sick in the hospital or your best friend or whoever it is, you might not be in an emotional state to be able to enforce that. Or you might, you know, have somebody who doesn't agree with your choice to pull the plug, who wants to keep you alive for as long as possible. So you really want to pick that person carefully who can deal with it in a calm state, even at such an emotional time.
That makes a lot of sense. I'm reminded of a Seinfeld episode.
What's that?
When Kramer, he was deciding on his durable attorney and he had Elaine, and the attorney asked her that question on different scenarios. Mm-hmm. And she would say whether or not she should pull the plug. And she often answered, pull that plug like you're starting a lawnmower.
Yeah.
Like fast.
Absolutely.
No, that makes sense. So how can homeowners ensure that the estate plan reflects their current wishes and is up to date?
Well, if we could go back to that power of attorney.
Oh, please, real quick. Yes.
The other type of power of attorney has to deal with your finances, your money, your assets, your home, and your real estate. So that power of attorney is going to give somebody the power to maybe buy or sell your property, to pay your mortgage, to, if it's a rental property, to say, you know, pick these people or that people. The power of attorney is coming to play when you're alive, but incapacitated.
Okay, got it. And then typically, to be incapacitated, what do you need? Two doctors to?
Typically, it's two doctors. You can choose to only have one doctor. You could choose to name the doctor that decides, but I usually recommend against that. Typically now, in hospitals, a neuropsych team is the one that's going to evaluate you to say. Alternatively, it can also be used for when you're alive and well, not incapacitated, but you're alive and well, But say you're going to take a cruise around the world and you're not going to be around to sign documents. You can also do a limited power of attorney just for those purposes when you're not available.
Oh, that's fantastic. All right. That's very helpful. Thank you for expanding on that. So how can homeowners ensure that their estate plan reflects their current wishes and is up to date?
Everybody should be working with an estate planning attorney that follows up with them or that they feel free to call. I always tell my clients, if you have a major event in your life, which could be getting married, getting divorced, having a child, adopting a child. Now we have to add in, you know, donating eggs. that had come up. You buy or you sell a house. You start or you close a business. You experience changes in your health. Or something happens with your kids. It's always good to be able to have that relationship with an estate planning attorney that you know you're free to call them when you need to. You're free to email them when you need to. And you're not worried about getting charged, you know, a nickel and a dime every time that you actually not a nickel and a dime. A lot of it's like more like, you know, several hundred dollars
right.
or even more every time you call. You got to be able to have someone that you can check in with. And that estate planning attorney should be meeting with you, I would say, at least every 3 years, even if you don't have a significant event, just to go over and make sure that all your wishes are still the same. Your trust is actually funded, which is critical. The only way a trust can avoid probate is if the assets are actually in it.
Expand a little bit on the funded part. So you need a certain amount of money set aside in the trust, in a trust bank account. Is that what you mean by that?
All of your assets, except for your cars, basically, and often your retirement accounts should be titled in the name of your trust. If they're not, then they're not in the trust. So, and those assets still have to go through probate.
So just because you have a trust, and let's say in the trust you say, okay, this bank account at Schools First will go to my spouse, or let's say there's one surviving parent and they leave it to their son, Tom. You have to have that bank account, literally in the bank account's trust is the trust's bank account, opposed to just Jim Smith.
Yeah, it would be Jim Smith as trustee for the Smith Trust.
And it specifically needs to say that at the bank account, not only in your trust.
Yes, the bank assets need to be titled into the trust. And that's where a lot of the kind of DIY and document only.
Do it yourself.
Or even attorneys who just, you know, they say for $1,000, we'll give you a personalized estate plan. Well, it's not personalized because there's no way that they could do that for that amount of money. But they also don't follow up to make sure that the trust is actually funded. So what these people end up with is a document that may or may not be well done, but it doesn't matter because they may as well just throw it away. Because if the assets aren't in it, you still are stuck going through probate. It only works if the assets are actually funded to the trust.
Wow.
Yeah, my office takes a big... we're different. We follow up with that. We help with funding if the client wants to. We automatically ourselves transfer the property, their properties, their personal residence, or if they have a second home, into their trust for them and prepare the deed, file that, or actually record that with the county recorder's office, because the house is usually the most significant asset of the trust.
Right. And that's not that hard. That's what we do when we close every escrow, is it just gets...
It's absolutely not that hard. And it's just that one simple step that will keep a family from having to go through the probate process.
Yeah, I had someone refinance once, and that someone I think was me, and we forgot to check a box. And
yes,
they reassess the taxes. My point is, every little detail can have a dramatic effect. I mean, just missing a box that needed to be checked. Is that fair to say?
Yes, absolutely. And with regard to refinances, I always tell my clients, if you refinance, call me. Because what happens when people refinance and they have it in the trust, it was in the trust right in the first place, they funded it, all that's good. Then they go to refi it. Like a couple years ago when the rates hit rock bottom, everybody refied. When you refi it, the bank does usually, they're supposed to do two deeds. They pull the property out of the trust, have you sign it personally because your personal name is what's going on their loan documents. And then they're supposed to do another deed, putting it back into the trust. But what I found is that occasionally those get recorded in the wrong order. So the property ends up outside of the trust.
Ouch.
Yeah, I just had a client who I did her trust, oh gosh, I don't know, 15 plus years ago. Put the house in the trust, everything was great. A couple years ago, she refied it. The bank never put it back into her trust. We didn't find that out until her daughters called me and said, you know what, our mom's not doing well. She's in a home. She's terminal right now. So I thought, you know what, let's just run a check and make sure. Check the title. Sure enough, it was in her name and not in the trust. So thank God we had enough time. It included a late night visit from me with a deed, but we were able to get that property recorded back into her trust just in time.
And to know how big a deal that is, tune into our previous episode, because we talk about the differences of selling or inheriting a property in probate and having to go through probate without a trust and have a trust. So in any event, that's good information. So what happens if you don't keep the trust up to date? You have any horror stories? I guess you gave us that one.
Yeah,
that
pretty... I have horror stories upon horror stories, sadly. Family disputes over asset distribution, you know. A lot of people want to think, oh, our kids, everybody gets along, everything is wonderful. And that might be the case, but after you pass, it might not be the case. Emotions are high and everybody deals with grief differently. Some people deal with it faster than others. Other people, I've seen them carry grudges that were never there before for 10 years and they're still complaining. Certain assets have big sentimental value to one. And if you don't address that and keep that up to date, the fighting you were hoping to prevent later on can still happen. Tax implications could have changed. Those exemptions amount we talked about in the last episode could have changed. You don't know if it's Republicans or Democrats, whoever's in charge might do that. And it might have unintended medical decisions. Some people did DNRs before COVID.
DNR, what's DNR?
Do not resuscitate.
Okay, thank you.
And some people did those before COVID, and then when COVID happened, changed their mind. But they never documented it. Sometimes things happen with kids. You know, we don't know who they're going to be when they're born. Like I did my son's trust. I did a trust for my son when he was born.
Right.
I didn't know how he was going to turn out. I didn't know how he was going to be a teenager. You know, you always hope for the best, but you don't know. You just don't know. And you don't know who else is going to be in their lives as much as we want to say we control everything. My thing for him was I wanted him to go to school. So I built in incentives into my trust to help ensure that.
Oh,
so he
smart.
Gets more earlier if he graduates from school.
Fantastic.
I want him to travel. So I put in a provision that puts him and my brother to go on a trip.
Oh.
There's some people in his life that I know may try to reach out to him for money if he ever gets any. So I put in protections to protect him against that. It's much easier for a person to say, I can't do it because of the trust, than to say, I won't give you something.
Right. Yeah,
much,
I've had to,
much easier.
We've had to use that in real estate transactions. So it almost sounds to me, though, you mentioned, for example, items that could have sentimental value to one person and not to another. You almost want to, after speaking to the attorney and or before, involve kind of your heirs in this at this point. Yes or no?
Depends. Some people do. It depends on the family dynamic.
Oh, that's true. I guess it could piss some people off.
It really depends on the family dynamic. People always ask, do I need to give everybody a copy of my estate plan? Say, well, you need to think about that. You might want to tell people ahead of time some things, but not everything. Sometimes if you know something's going to be a hot button, you just want to make the decision and then that's going to be it. When it's written down, you can hold someone to follow those instructions. When it's not, then you have people fighting over, well, mom told me this, dad told me that.
Wow.
Any conflict like that, if you can't resolve it on your own, even if you have a trust, you're going to end up in court. So you want to avoid that.
I'm going through that right now. Mm. Where a sibling is living at the property and won't move out.
That happens a lot.
Yeah.
That happens a lot. Sometimes there's a caregiver child who lives at a property, won't move out because they've been living there for free. They haven't saved the money to move out. All the other siblings want to sell the property.
That's exactly what's going on.
So sometimes in that situation, if the trust is clear, then the trustee has clear guidance on whether or not to allow that sibling to live there as like a life estate, like we talked about in the first episode, or not. But the bottom line is that if that caregiver child won't move out, you may have to do a full unlawful detainer action to get them out of the house.
Yeah, I think that's what we're in the process of doing, matter of fact.
We have to go through an
eviction.
Yeah, that's painful for a family to go through. And that's at least also 6 months to a year to get to make that happen. And those are some rifts with families that happen after people pass that never heal. So
yeah,
you can avoid that a lot. You can do a lot, but you can't control people's behavior. So you have to sort of plan for the worst, hope for the best.
Yeah, I thought of this episode helping to financially, but boy, it's emotionally, you really need a trust opposed to not having a trust and go through probate, because not only for financial reasons, but even for emotional reasons.
Yeah, definitely. For a trust, you can just do so many things with it. You can say when you want somebody to get it, who you want some, you know, to get it, and that kind of thing. The other important thing, though, with regard to probate and houses, you have to go through the court to get permission and then get permission to release the funds that you got from selling the house and do all that. But also, if you don't have a will and you're in probate, then your children can get it at 18.
Oh, wow.
So you might have not had a will or had a will and just left everything to your child, but didn't specify when they can get it. If your kid is 18, they get everything. And a windfall at 18 is not necessarily the best time to get it in your life. And it doesn't really help them use those funds to set themselves up.
Yeah. In a trust, you can even have them get a portion at 18, a portion at 21, a portion at whatever.
Absolutely. You can really help them out and you can really dictate and you can use it as a tool to help them become educated in how to deal with their finances and the timing of it. Yeah, and probate's public. Those probate records, their court records, they're public. So there are people out there who review those probate records and they say, oh, look, this 17-year-old is set to inherit $2 million. It's locked away in an account and he gets it on his 18th birthday.
Wow. There's, so you have predator crooks out
there. There are absolutely predator crooks out there. I've had a situation where this person in their teens started hanging out, whatever. There was a group of friends. He was a skateboarder. Guy came to the skateboard park, but it could be anywhere. They figured out that this guy was going to inherit a lot of money when he turned 18. They befriended him. He inherited the money. They partied that money away from him. It should have lasted him a lifetime. It lasted about 6 months.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, it happens a lot. And with trusts, everything can be remained private. You don't have to file anything publicly. So no one will know when your heirs are getting whatever it is that you're leaving them.
Interesting. Yeah, and then when you can point to the trust as a reason, you're right, that is far better than saying no.
Absolutely. Another thing a trust can do with minors is, even if they're holding on to the money, to say that you decided that your kids don't get anything till they're 25. And your kids are, I don't know, 10 at that time when you pass away. The trustee, they're not going to distribute anything out to them outright, but they can advance things to their kid for health, maintenance, education, and support. So they can pay college tuition. They can pay for a medical procedure that insurance won't cover. They can do all those things. But without the trust, then if somebody dies when the child is 10 and the parents pass away, then what happens is the court makes you set up an account. It's a locked account. It's called an UPMA account. And the court supervises that account. So to take money from that account to help support the child, you have to go to court and ask for approval.
Opposed to being in a trust.
Opposed to being in a trust. With a trust, the trustee has the discretion whenever the funds are needed to go ahead and pay for that, whatever it is that that child needs.
Oh, that's a no-brainer.
Absolutely.
How can estate planning help owners avoid probate and the cost delays that come with it? I'm assuming it's putting in a trust.
It definitely is. Put it in a trust. A will still gets you to probate. The only way to not have to go through probate is to have a trust and to have it be fully funded. meaning the title of the property with regard to houses is actually in the trust names.
Yeah, that's a big deal. I think a lot of people will get trusts made. Let's say there are two houses in there, but forget to change the title of their trust. I know we talked about that. So tell me this. What are some of the strategies that homeowners can use to protect their assets and provide for their children or dependents after their death?
Well, they can space out distributions like we talked about earlier. They can give a right to the house outright. Once it's outright and it's been actually distributed to that person, then that asset becomes subject to that person's creditors. So if you're worried about creditors of your children coming after your what you've left for them to inherit, then that's a problem, right? So you can keep it in a lifetime asset protection trust, and that will avoid that. If you're worried about your kids getting divorced later on and having the ex-spouse try to come after the assets, that's a problem if it's distributed outright. If it's not, if it's in a lifetime asset protection trust, you can avoid all that.
Interesting.
You can protect those assets. The other thing that happens to kids, and it's a hard topic for a lot of people to talk about, and a lot of attorneys don't automatically include this in their trust, which I think is a shame, is if your child becomes special needs or has an addiction. So I meet with people all the time. Are their kids are happy? They're healthy. Nope, we don't have anybody who's special needs. Nope, our kids are never going to be addicted to drugs. And I always say, well, you know what? That's great. And we hope that that's the way it stays, but you never know. I had an instance come across my firm where a child was, you know, on a roll, all that stuff, but then got in a car accident, had a traumatic brain injury, became special needs. And the trust didn't address that. That was written by another attorney. So what happens is that the parents passed away, and it was horrible because we had to figure out how to prevent this boy, or then a man, from getting everything that was bequeathed to him, because then he would lose all of his state funding, all of the help, all of the support. And so it's a disaster. So you really need to have in your trust, prepare for the worst, hope for the best. So in my trust, I always include special needs provisions. I always include provisions if someone becomes addicted. Now the opioid epidemic is just everywhere.
Yeah.
And we just, again, hope it never happens. But if your child becomes addicted, the last thing you want them to do is inherit a lot of money.
That's one party.
Yeah, it's one party. It could be their last party.
Yeah.
And it's not going to go to help them. So in those situations, the provisions in the trust that I draft take over, and the trustee has a right to withhold any distributions to that person. But what they can do is they can pay for things on their behalf. Like if there's an addicted beneficiary, perhaps the trustee pays for rehab. Money never passes through the hands of the addicted party, but maybe it pays for rehab. Maybe it pays rent on a property so that the person, at least they're not out on the streets. But again, money never goes to that beneficiary's hands. So that beneficiary can't waste the money or use it to increase their drug use.
That brings up another point. The executor is obviously an enormously important role in this whole thing. So do you have any advice on how to choose an executor?
Yeah. And so there's a thing too with executors. So typically executors are for wills and trustees are for trusts.
Or trustees. Maybe I misspoke.
But honestly, no, it's the same thing. There's a lot of like buzzwords in estate planning. The meanings behind them are very simple. But when you're choosing your trustee or your executor, both, usually that's the same person. They need to be good with money. They need to have a level head. They don't have to be a relative. Sometimes you purposely do not want to pick a relative. A lot of people choose their children, which is great, if their children can withstand what might come at them from their other siblings, if they have siblings. Sometimes there are companies out there like First American Trust, who does a good job, actually, of caring for the assets of people. So you can do private, or you can do, somebody that you know.
Well, that's interesting. So you can actually hire a person, because I've seen that. I've sold a lot of houses for people that had inherited a house and a trust. And I know there's a lot of work involved in being the trustee.
There is. And there also becomes a personal responsibility, too, and personal exposure. So whoever is the trustee that their assets are personally exposed for what they do for that trust. So it's not to be a position to be taken on lightly or to be given out lightly.
Wow. You know, I don't know why I had this thought, but is there insurance that can be provided for this poor trustee that may make a mistake or no?
I haven't found one.
Okay. It probably is not.
Yeah.
Wow. That's very helpful. So how can homeowners use a life insurance as part of their estate planning? I know that took a left turn there, but I wanted to talk more a little bit about life insurance and how that can be used.
No, that's okay. Life insurance is great. Life insurance is something that passes outside of your estate. So when we were talking before in the first episode about what your total estate inclusive of, that life insurance, you can have it transfer outside of the estate. So you pick the beneficiary. You can pick the beneficiary to go to, you might want to have it be to your kids so they can pay for the repair of the house for so it can be ready to be sold. You can use it to fund all kinds of things. And it's money that comes to your relatives or whoever your beneficiary, designated beneficiary is, immediately. So if you know other assets or not that you own aren't liquid, like you have stock or maybe all of your assets are tied up in real estate, but you know that the person who survives and who's the beneficiary is going to need money to fund that immediately. Well, the insurance comes through.
So a life insurance policy, would you leave the beneficiary as being the trust or the person?
Okay. With life insurance policies, what I do is I advise my clients to first leave it to a person if, you know, like a spouse or if somebody who's an adult of age is knowledgeable. And then second, the contingent beneficiary would go to their trust. And the reason is that you don't want a beneficiary to get the proceeds of a life insurance policy before the age that you want them to get it. So for instance, if a child, you did the trust, okay, you have your trust, that's great, your house is in your trust. You have this life insurance policy, your child is 10 when you pass away. The life insurance policy lists your kid as the beneficiary. Insurance company is going to require you to get an UTMA account where that money is going to be locked until that child becomes 18. And there's a public record of that UTMA account, and everybody or the predators out there will be able to access to know when that child is going to receive that money. If the trust is second, if you have a minor child, then it is included in the value of your estate. But you can say when you want your child to get those proceeds and how you want those proceeds to be given.
Wow. It's amazing how just small, minor kind of omissions will cause an enormous problem.
Enormous.
In this episode, we talked about durable power of attorney, funding your trust and keeping it updated, and protecting your heirs from wealth predators, and in some cases themselves. Thank you, Stephanie. Stephanie, how can our listeners find you?
They can find my website at kitzeslaw.com, KITZESLAW.com. My phone number is 949-517-2275. You can also text that number, or they can email me at stephanie@kitzeslaw.com.
Fantastic. And friends, as a bonus, mention the Jones Zone when you give Stephanie a call or text her, and you'll receive a free family wealth planning session that's a value of $750. Thank you again, Stephanie. Take care.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for tuning into the Jones Zone, your resource for building wealth and knowledge in everything real estate. If you found this information and insights shared in today's episode valuable, be sure to head over to iTunes to rate the show. Leave a review and subscribe so that you don't miss another episode. Remember, when it comes to real estate, knowledge is power. Stay informed and stay ahead of the game with us. I'll be back next week with even more expert advice and industry insights. Don't miss it. Thank you.